there. Thanks for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly discussion on antidepressants and the issues surrounding them.
Hello, this is James. Welcome to episode 11 of Let's Talk Withdrawal, a weekly podcast discussing antidepressants. Before we start, I just wanted to reflect on the last few weeks. We're 11 episodes in now and the response has been amazing. Thank you for your support so far and for getting in touch and sharing your thoughts with me. It's really important to me that we get this message out to people who have yet to come into contact with psychiatric medications. You can help this by rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. If you're listening in iTunes now, please leave a review and a star rating. It takes a couple of minutes, but it will encourage more people to listen in. Thank you so much. Okay, this week we have an interview with Nora, who lives in Ireland. Nora tells us about her experience of an extreme reaction to her prescribed antidepressant that occurred almost immediately upon taking it. She tells us about how her doctors reacted to those difficulties and how those potential adverse effects weren't even discussed. Nora, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
No problem. Thank you so much for taking this initiative. Like, I've been trying to figure out what to do in terms of activism or raising awareness to these issues, but couldn't come up really with much yet. So I admire your work, actually.
Well, thank you so much. But actually, the thanks should go to you and the others like you for being willing to speak out. Firstly, Nora, for the listeners, could you give us a little bit about your background and how you came to be taking an antidepressant?
Sure. So I haven't had any contact. So I'm 35 and I hadn't any contact with antidepressants for my whole life until this happened. And I was basically working in a big company, working long hours, studying part-time additionally, and had some private issues as well, like health issues in the family and so on. So I was pretty stressed out. And I was stressed out to the point where I was like, oh, how should I cope with all of this? Probably mainly because I had this double workload of studying and working. And I wasn't sleeping enough because I had to do assignments and was working until late in the night and so on. So I kind of in my head, I had read about antidepressants and how they can help you in a stressful time, or, you know, the PR things that you read. Yeah. So I went to the GP and I told him that I was stressed, that I had this workload and so on. And within a 5-minute consultation, he just handed me a prescription and I didn't really think much about it. I just, you know, took the prescription and thought, okay, I'll take this for a week or two to get over the acute stress. And then once I can take a holiday, I'll stop taking this and de-stress. And that was kind of my idea, what would happen. Turned out pretty differently.
And Nora, when you walked away with that prescription, were you aware of any potential side effects or any difficulties when stopping? Did your GP talk to you about those things?
Not at all. The GP didn't mention a word about anything. And ironically, like he, at the same time with the antidepressant, he also offered a benzo. And I had heard that benzos are addictive, so I declined that, telling him I don't want any addictive medication. Right. So he scratched the benzo from the prescription and, yeah, so left me with the antidepressant. And it didn't, it's a bit, I guess I was a bit naive, but it didn't occur to me at all that there could be something wrong with this or that this could be addictive or dependency inducing or however you want to call that.
Well, actually, Nora, I wouldn't say that it's naive at all. I'd say that it was your doctor's responsibility to explain those things to you.
Yeah. He didn't know, actually, as later turned out.
And so what happened next when you collected your prescription and started to take your pills?
So the first thing that happened, maybe I should mention that here in Ireland, they don't always give you a leaflet with the medication. They sometimes, so there was 10 pills prescribed and they give you a blister of 10 and then you take the blister and you take it and you don't know anything about it. So that happens. So I took the medication for 5 days, I guess, and I had a pretty horrible adverse reaction pretty much straight away. So on the first day of taking it, I started sweating like crazy. I started getting really weird, anxious, agitated thoughts. I started to get almost paranoid, you know, about some issues that were at work. Like, I started to freak out over them, even though before they weren't that much of an issue. So I started to get weird and weird. And then I started to get all kinds of other side effects that I don't want to mention now because they're a bit, the listeners might not want to hear all the details.
Yeah.
But then I stopped after 5 days. I stopped taking this medication. And the side effects within the first 24 hours went better. But then after like maybe 36 hours, I started to go into like the full-blown withdrawal, train-spotting type withdrawal, like, you know, from the movies, like with convulsions and sweating and urges to throw myself out of the window and to stab myself with any knife I could find. And it was really absolutely horrendous. Like, you can't even begin to explain that kind of experience to anyone who hasn't experienced it.
Nora, that sounds very scary. What was your reaction to that? Did you go back to your GP for support, or did you try to support yourself in other ways?
Yeah, so I had to go back to the GP for sick certs and stuff, and I confronted him. Like, I was a total basket case, but I still managed to confront him because I had read up. By the that time, I had searched the internet because I knew that what was happening to me wasn't me. So I had searched and I had found scores and scores of people having the same issues with these withdrawals. And so I was clear on what was happening. And I think that was my luck, because if not, I probably would have ended up in a psychiatric hospital or something. And even worse things would have happened likely. So I confronted the GP and he didn't seem to know anything about withdrawal. He got angry at me because I was all agitated and like I didn't attack him verbally or anything, but I was pretty wound up. And so he got angry and basically tried to get rid of me as fast as possible.
That's so bad to have that attitude towards someone who's clearly struggling because of something you yourself has prescribed. It's just not right, is it?
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. Like, and then the whole my whole experience with doctors throughout the last 2 years about this issue, because I'm still having all these symptoms, just not at that scale, has been like that. So I really haven't gotten much help from anywhere.
And are you still suffering withdrawal effects from that time?
Yeah, that's right. So about maybe, this is now almost exactly 2 years after this happened. And for the first 1.5 years, I was really, really, really ill. So much that I was often just curled up on the sofa or in bed sobbing, because I had about 60 different symptoms, mental and physical, and it was just a nightmare. And now it's kind of getting better, luckily. So I can see a relatively straight line of improvement, but I still have electric shocks in my head pretty much all the time and in my eyes, and I have all kinds of other weird symptoms still. So I'm still not back at work, but I guess now it's just at the point where I don't suffer that much that I think life has no meaning or I can't survive this anymore, but it's like still kind of annoying.
I can completely understand that. And Nora, what was the reaction of your family and friends to what you were experiencing?
My family have been really, really good, because they knew me from before and they knew that if anyone isn't a hypochondriac type or if anyone doesn't get psychosomatic symptoms, then that's me. So they knew that this was actually real and a real physical problem. So they read up, and luckily they speak English. I'm originally not from an English-speaking country, but luckily they could read the English materials that are out there, because in other languages there is rarely any information about this withdrawal. So they read up, they watched videos, and they understood. And sometimes they're pressuring me a bit to go back to work, but not too badly. So I guess they've been pretty understanding. And my friends, that was interesting because I could really see who are really my friends. So people who I didn't expect started to reach out and listen what happened and read up on the subject. and others just withdrew and just didn't want to hear anything about it. So that was pretty interesting.
It's a worryingly common experience, but one that mainstream medicine doesn't seem to want to talk about.
Yeah. Even I've experienced, so my experience with healthcare providers, most of them just didn't want anything to do with it. But some, you could tell they know what's going on, but they're unwilling to admit it. And I think that's even worse. That really shocks me. Like when you know someone knows what is happening, but is not willing to say, oh, I'm sorry this happened to you. I know this is a side effect. They just, I guess, want to protect their colleagues or just don't want to admit in front of themselves what is the real story.
I agree. And I have certainly experienced that myself too. I'm pleased that things are improving for you, even though you've clearly been through a very difficult time to get to where you are. Are you doing anything in particular regarding support or therapy to help maintain that improvement?
Well, from therapy-wise, there is no help here in Ireland whatsoever.
Right.
So nothing at that front. But I've got my own kind of rehabilitation program that I kind of designed for myself. So I try to do as much as I can. So I try to learn, I try to go out, I try to even do sports if I can. But I think that wouldn't work for everybody because some people get really set back by anything strenuous, which I notice as well. So if I do sports the next day, I feel worse. But I'm hoping that overall this will improve things. I have no evidence for that, obviously, because I have no control group.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's my hope anyway.
And I just wondered, Nora, if you had a friend who came to you and was considering taking an antidepressant, what would your advice be?
So that actually happened already. I had a friend who came back from the GP with an antidepressant, and I would just give them as much information as possible about the potential side effects. Of course, they have to make their own decision, but after informing them about everything that can happen and also about the success rates, because even from the clinical trials conducted by the pharmaceutical companies, the success rates where people actually get better, or where not even get better, but where their depressive symptoms improve, is only 50% and 30% with placebo. So basically for a 20% chance of maybe improving some more symptoms, people are running a huge risk. So
yeah.
I explain all of that. And then I explain also this analogy of would you drink alcohol every day to improve your symptoms? Because it's basically also a psychoactive substance that suppresses symptoms. So I try to explain it that way, that if they decide to take this drug, they're taking a psychoactive substance that alters their brain and that may numb them temporarily, but on the long term is likely to do harm. Some kind of harm, and to some people, apparently a lot of harm as well. So, yeah, that's what I tell them.
I think that's a really good analogy to make in terms of using alcohol to self-medicate. Nora, was there anything else that you'd like to make the listeners aware of?
The education of the doctors is another one where I think that varies a bit by country. I've seen in my home country, doctors are a bit more aware of side effects and they would, for example, before vaccinating, they would read you out all the potential effects that can happen and so on. Whereas where I'm living currently in Ireland, doctors seem to be totally ignorant to those effects, to the point where several doctors have said to me, no, you don't need to read the leaflet because what's written in the leaflet doesn't actually happen. That is just kind of an insurance policy for the drug companies. So they don't actually believe that anything that's written in this product information can occur. Yeah. And for me, that's just, they're so misinformed. Yeah. And they're playing with the lives of people.
They are, you're right, because part of the reason that information is there is to help patients make an informed choice about drugs which could be problematic.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not happening at all at the moment. Firstly, because doctors don't inform anyone, and secondly, because the risks written in the leaflet are actually not explained well enough, and some risks are not written in there at all. So I got my hands on the leaflet of the medication that I took afterwards. And yes, some things that I experienced were described there, but were described in a way that you would think, oh, this is all mild and this will go away after you stop taking the medication. So reading the leaflet designed for the patient, you wouldn't actually be alarmed about anything. So that has to change.
And Nora, I wanted to ask about your hopes for the future. Are you aiming to get back to full fitness, or do you expect there to be any long-term difficulties?
I hope that I'll get back to how I was before, because I was like, I was an athlete as well. Like, I was really, really fit and healthy. So I hope that I'll get back there. But realistically, I think there will be some residue side effects that will not go away. I would guess, because now it's 2 years. There is still a bit of improvement, but I think some of these things will probably stick around for quite a while at least.
And can I ask what kind of issues are causing you the most difficulty at this point, 2 years out from when you took the antidepressant?
The electric shocks, definitely. Like, right. It's a bit as if someone would put a cattle prod on your head maybe every 30 seconds or something. They were so bad at some stage that they were causing involuntary movements. So for me, I don't even understand how that can happen, you know, chemically or physiologically. How can your brain produce an electric shock that makes you twitch, that makes your arms move, your legs move, your face twitch or something? I have no idea how that can even happen, but it happens.
It's certainly something I've heard other people describe too. I also wanted to ask about other support. Do you make use of the internet, and in particular Facebook, to help you make sense of what you're experiencing?
Yes, totally. I'm in many groups and in many forums, mostly reading and occasionally helping someone else who just fell into this drama, because I'm still trying to find out what we can do about this and how to help people firstly and how to raise awareness to this. And these groups are really like a wealth of information about symptom patterns, about what helps people, what doesn't help people, although there is not much that helps people, to be honest. If someone would find something that helps, I think there would be a lot of happy people. So I use those groups a lot. I think they're really, really, really helpful. They're also very sad, because since I've been in that community, about 15 people have committed suicide because they couldn't handle the symptoms anymore. So this is sad, but I also want to know about it. Like, I want to know about every single person that dies from these withdrawals, because at some stage someone will want to know and someone will want to look at this, and then I want to have the data to present it.
I agree, because we have been in this position before, notably with benzodiazepines. And now there's much more recognition that benzos can create dependence very quickly, and even you yourself knew to be cautious. I am hopeful that in the not too distant future, we get to the point where people have the full facts about antidepressants too.
Yeah. And I think the work you're doing there with the podcasts and with your petition is really helping that, because even though mainstream media may not acknowledge these issues widely yet, but people use Facebook and people use other channels to distribute this information. So at least they will be a bit aware of some controversy or something. So yeah, that will be really helpful. And media are starting also to look into this a little bit. So hopefully that will become more and more as well.
Well, thank you, Nora. The podcast and the petition and the other things wouldn't have any impact without the bravery of people like you that are willing to speak out about these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I would shout this from the rooftops to everyone who wants to listen. So, yeah, for me, that's not an issue at all. For me, that feels like an obligation that I have to the people who may become hurt in the future, you know, may or may not, depending on what we do.
Nora, thank you so much. You've been so forthright about your experience, and it will help others to hear this. It's very powerful to hear someone tell their own story in their own voice.
Well, what can you do, right? I'm still hoping that this is good for something. Something has to happen still. Like, I'm always saying to everyone, the universe owes me. Like, there has to be something good that comes out of this.
Well, Nora, I wish you every success in coming through this, and I'm confident that you will come through it.
Thank you so much for your time and for doing this podcast. I think it will really, really bring this subject forward.
Thanks so much, Nora. I'm really grateful to Nora for talking to us. Her experience, while different to the tapering and withdrawal effects that we've previously discussed, shows us that in some cases antidepressants can cause immediate problems and should therefore be approached with caution.
Feedback.
I'd love to hear from you, so please get in touch. You can email me on feedback@jfmoore.co.uk. And I just wanted to share this email with you. Just want to say how much I appreciate your podcasts. The EFT technique was especially interesting for me. It gave me a feeling that there was something I could do about the fear, which is positive. I completely agree that there are a lot of treatments that are not pills that should be tried first. If you do podcasts about more of these strategies, I'd love to know about them. I'm going to speak to my doctors about reducing my medications soon, but it annoys me that you have to chase them about something that should be part of a treatment plan. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And we do have interviews coming up on the podcast that look at some of the other alternative approaches that will help not only with withdrawal, but also for the issues that got people onto medication in the first place. Also, I just wanted to mention the Facebook group that supports this podcast. We're nearing 450 members now, and there are some excellent discussions about the guests that we have and wider issues around trauma and emotional distress and current mental health care issues too. You'd be very welcome to join us. Just go to Facebook and search for Let's Talk Withdrawal, or there's a direct link on my website, jfmoore.co.uk. I also wanted to mention this petition on behalf of the Recovery and Renewal Group. This petition to the Scottish Parliament is intended to raise political, press and public awareness of the plight of individuals who are affected by dependence on and withdrawal from prescribed antidepressants and benzodiazepines, and specifically to ask the Scottish Government to support the British Medical Association's UK-wide call for action to provide timely and appropriate support for individuals affected. People from any country can sign in support of the petition, and you can add your own comments too, either directly on the petition or you can email them to petitions@parliament.scot until the 10th of May 2017. Thereafter, the petition will be formally lodged for further investigation and consideration by the Scottish Parliament Public Pensions Committee. There is a direct link to the petition on my own website, jfmoore.co.uk. Just go to the links page and it's right at the top. If you have any questions about the petition, you can contact Marion by emailing recoveryandrenewal@gmail.com, or you can tweet @recover2renew. That's @recover2renew. Please support and sign this petition because it's really important to raise awareness of this issue. Finally, if you're struggling with withdrawal yourself and don't know where to turn, there are some excellent resources listed on my website, jfmoore.co.uk. Please go and have a look.
Please do not increase, decrease, or stop your psychoactive prescription medication without the advice and support of a medical or mental health professional.
Thanks so much for listening today, and until next time, take care.
Thank you so much for listening to Let's Talk Withdrawal. Come back next week for more news and views. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and subscribe in iTunes.